Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We actually, I think, have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today after one day of all good. Then yesterday was all crazy. Jim, we're sponsored today by Patriot Mobile, and we'll get to offer a little more information about that sponsor a little bit later in the podcast. Let's start with the good martini. And Jim, this is not coming as a surprise given the things that Trump has said and given the public meetings that Trump had with retired U.S. Marine Corps General James Mattis. But the announcement came yesterday. It's been confirmed. General Mattis, now retired, is the choice to be the next Secretary of Defense. And this is getting rave reviews from far more than just conservatives and Republicans. This is a guy who has a wealth of respect across the nation, especially those who know of his time in uniform. There was a great article, I believe, at thefederalist.com today from someone who served with Mattis shortly after Desert Storm and then at two different times post 9/11. Really just a Marine's Marine, a man's man. He was out there in the front line, sleeping on the cold ground, eating cold MREs with his guys. He has a personal touch. He also has the ability to see the big picture. Great student of military history. He also is known for some colorful quotations, including this one from Iraq in 2003. Quote, he's talking to Iraqi elders at this point. I come in peace. I didn't bring artillery, but I'm pleading with you with tears in my eyes. If you blank with me, I'll kill you all. And then he also told his Marines in Iraq, be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everyone you meet. And also, there is only one retirement plan for terrorists. Most of the others, we can't use all the words. So, Jim, this is a guy who's no nonsense, but seems to have a pretty good grasp on the tasks ahead when it comes to destroying ISIS, revitalizing the military, and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, when you say, oh, this guy is really liked by the men who served under him. No, they really gush about him.
Yes.
In a way you might not think Marines are capable of. I mean, just a absolute reverence and admiration. And it's been quite a while since we've seen a presidential cabinet appointee generate actual enthusiasm. I mean, just an effusive tone from everybody who's worked with them and just widespread respect. You may have heard, Greg, that you know apparently there's some regulation that the Secretary of Defense has to have been out of uniform for 7 years. Otherwise, the concern is you have, you know, it's undermining the civilian control of the military. I've heard some people arguing about whether that law is really even constitutional. John McCain has already said he will draw up the legislation to ensure that there can be a waiver for Mattis in this case. I understand New York Senator Kristen Gillibrand has said she wants to make an issue of this and that she may oppose the nomination on this. One of the recurring themes of our podcast, Greg, since Election Day is how the Democrats aren't learning. Here's a guy who is, you know, nearly universally beloved by everybody who's worked under him and who, respected, accomplished both in Afghanistan and Iraq, doesn't just talk the talk, walks the walk. And the Senate Democrats want to hold him up over this obscure regulation? Really? You want to go there, guys? Go right ahead. Be my guest. I myself, Greg, I would not do this if I were them. My sneaking suspicion, Greg, is that Mattis will begin his testimony at his confirmation hearing. I am coming to you pleading with tears in my eyes. And let them fill in the rest of that infamous infamous quote of his. Don't mess with him. Don't mess with him. He really has laid out why you should not mess with him. It seems like a great choice. Skeptics of Trump like myself have to take our hats off to him and say, so far, this cabinet's looking pretty darn good. And Mattis may be, even if you have concerns about other members of the Trump National Security Team, Mattis is a guy who seems like tough as nails when it comes to fighting a war, but not the least bit eager to fight any more than he has to, which I think is exactly the philosophy Americans like to see in their Department of Defense.
That is exactly right. So hopefully that nomination doesn't run into too much friction. I really don't think it will. I can't imagine that too many Democrats would get that excited about the need to pass a waiver before that could go forward. And I think that'll go forth pretty easily. But who knows? You know, Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote, Jim. So who knows
what there you go. Yeah.
the type of roadblocks they'll throw up. Speaking of which, apparently 3 weeks, not enough time to let things simmer down before getting the two campaign managers in the same room to talk about what happened in a very close presidential election. But that's what they tried to do at Harvard last night. And there was Jen Palmieri, the communications director from the Clinton campaign. Kellyanne Conway, of course, the campaign manager for Donald Trump. Dave Bossi was there. He was part of the Trump inner circle as well. And of course, when it came time to why Trump was able to gather steam and gather traction, Jen Palmieri says it's all about appealing to white supremacists, which Kellyanne Conway did not appreciate.
In Steve Bannon's own words and Donald Trump's own words, the platform that they gave to white supremacists, white nationalists, the and it platform. Is a very, very important moment in our history as our country. Yeah. And I think as, you know, his presidency goes forward, I'm going to be very glad to have been part of the campaign that tried
to... Hey, Jen, do you think that she said white supremacists.
Well,
I know it's mentioned a lot on your website, too. Do you think I ran a campaign where white supremacists had a platform? Are you going to look me in the face and tell me that?
It did. Kellyanne
really?
Did.
Oh,
it did.
And that's how you lost?
It did.
Do you think you could have just had a decent message for the white working class voters? Do you think this woman who has nothing in common with...
I'm not
anybody.
Saying that's what you won, but that's
these
kind
counties,
of campaign
we
that was
flipped
run.
The over
yes.
200 counties that President Obama won and Donald Trump just won. You think that's because of what you just said or because people aren't ready for a woman president? Really? How about it's Hillary Clinton? She doesn't connect with people. How about they have nothing in common with her? How about you had no economic message?
Guys.
Jim, you and I talked multiple times earlier this year in the campaign about the people on the fringe who have disgusting viewpoints, who, for whatever reason, felt more emboldened this campaign season. Some people point to Trump's rhetoric and his campaign. Others say that's completely unfair. Whatever the reason, those voices seem to have greater resonance this year. But the idea, right along with Hillary Clinton's half of Trump supporters belong in a basket of deplorables, is just so wrong in terms of the scope of this issue. Conway laid it out pretty well there, I think, when she said that Trump flipped 200 counties that voted for Barack Obama. So unless people got racist over 4 years, it just doesn't add up. And it just seems like the Democrats don't want to face reality and what really happened here.
I mean, look, as implausible as this explanation is, it is the one that is most comforting to Democrats. And in particular, if you're, you know, like as much as the average Democrat might be depressed and angry and in denial and apoplectic and all these, this, you know, sea of bad emotions that have been roiling in them since Election Day. Imagine being part of the team that was running the Clinton campaign and that, you know, this was your job, you know, to use the internet meme. You had one job, get Hillary elected. And they failed in that. And we can argue how much of that was because of the candidate. We can argue how much of that was because of a lack of message or other factors. But the explanation that is most comforting to anybody who had a stake and whose job was to elect Hillary Clinton is that the country's racist, is that the country is, you know, sexist, it's not ready for a woman president, that ultimately there were just too many troglodyte-like ancient attitudes and hatreds and biases and malevolence in the hearts of Americans for them to overcome. And at one point, I believe Palmieri says, like, I'd rather lose the way I lost than win the way you won. Which is their attempt to kind of devalue this. Now, every couple of years, every time a party has a defeat, inevitably the most comforting explanation is, well, we lost because we're too nice. We lost because we're too high-minded. We're too sophisticated. We're just too good for the electorate. And if we just would get nasty enough, then the other side would, we'd be able to beat the other side. 99 times out of 100, that's nonsense, right? Both parties have plenty of mudslinging, plenty of, you know, plenty of opposition research, plenty of dirty tricks and underhanded methods and dishonest messaging and guilt by association. Look, we've all seen politics, right? I am not convinced that either party is remotely has their hands clean. But this is the explanation that lets you off the hook for your own mistakes and your own bad judgment, your own inability to see the state of the electorate clearly. So I'm not surprised the Democrats, and in particular the Hillary camp, are sticking to this. My suspicion is, Greg, they're really going to push this over the next 4 years, because to acknowledge otherwise, that ultimately what they were offering was less popular and less interesting and less appealing than Donald Trump with all of his flaws, is just too much for them mentally to take.
Facts are terrible things to have to consider after you lose a campaign everyone thought you were going to win, including yourself. Oh, well. Well, speaking of facts, would you switch phone companies if you knew your current carrier was using your money to fund far-left causes, restrict your Second Amendment rights, or promote abortion through organizations like Planned Parenthood? What if there was a liberal phone company targeting conservative candidates and organizations? Would you want to switch to a conservative phone company to help fight against their liberal agenda? Well, the fact is your current phone carrier may be using your money to undermine your conservative beliefs. And they're fighting for liberal social change, contributing to other groups on your dime. Well, Patriot Mobile has had enough, and they've decided to take action.
Patriot Mobile offers nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices and donates up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. You get the same quality service, the latest and greatest devices, including the Apple 6 and Galaxy S7, for example, competitive prices, and the center-right causes that you believe in. Finally, a mobile phone company that believes what you believe.
Patriot Mobile is America's only conservative phone company. It was created to fight for conservative causes and defend conservative candidates. Do not let the liberals and their phone company allies defeat our conservative leaders. Stand with Patriot Mobile and give voice to your conservative values every time you place a call, send a text, or make a status update. Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. Join the conversation. To sign up, 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. The 3-Martini Lunch is brought to you by Patriot Mobile, so make your cell phone company as conservative as you are. 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini today. And the big news for Donald Trump, of course, this week, in addition to appointing Mad Dog Mattis and others to the cabinet that we heard about earlier in the week, was the deal he struck with Carrier to keep about 1,100 jobs in Indianapolis. Several hundred, maybe even more than that, jobs are still headed to Mexico. But he and Mike Pence struck a deal with Carrier, with some tax incentives, mind you, to keep those 1,100 jobs in Indianapolis for the time being. Trump went there on Thursday to celebrate the deal with the workers, who are obviously very happy about that. And there's some things to like here, some things not to like. Obviously, the image of a president who promised to fight for American blue-collar jobs and then actually rolling up his sleeves and working something out appeals to a lot of people. And then he also talked about some of his plans to make it more hospitable for American businesses to stay put right where they are. And obviously, most conservatives will agree with this approach.
One of the things we're doing to keep them is we're going to be lowering our business tax from 35%, hopefully down to 15%. The other thing we're doing is regulations. The regulations are, in fact, if I asked Greg and your folks, you would probably say regulations might be worse for you than even the high taxes.
Wow, I didn't expect him to specifically ask me. But yes, regulations and taxes are burdensome to American businesses, and hopefully we can reduce the burden of both. But when it comes to what Trump actually did in this case, well, some people are a little bit on edge about this, because here's something else Trump said on Thursday.
Companies are not going to leave the United States anymore without consequences. Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'll tell you right now.
And of course, on the campaign trail, he talked about a 35% tariff on companies that leave and then try to sell their goods back here in the U.S. Jim Pethikoukas, longtime economist over at the American Enterprise Institute on CNBC yesterday, not at all excited about this.
I think this is the worst economic speech by an American politician since 1984. Walter Mondale promised to reverse Reaganomics. I think this is absolutely the worst speech. The idea that American corporations are going to have to try to make business decisions not based on the fact that we've created an ideal environment for economic growth in the United States, but out of fear of punitive actions based on who knows what criteria exactly from a presidential administration. I think that's absolutely chilling.
So, Jim, it's nice to see a president care, but to see a president micromanage in each of these deals, it smacks of crony capitalism and intimidation to a lot of people. What do you make of all this?
You know, this is one of those circumstances where there are a lot of times we have seen Trump do what Democrats do and leave them sputtering, and we kind of feel good about it. It's kind of satisfying to see the shoe on the other foot. This is one where I think we're smiling less because, you know, look, the moment you say, I don't like this deal, the commoners, well, what do you think? Those workers should lose their jobs? What are you, heartless? What's wrong with you? You know, To oppose this deal is to support watching lots of air conditioning manufacturing workers off on the unemployment line, the devastation of a community, et cetera, et cetera. Look, it's a great deal for those workers. I'm sure a lot of people in Indiana are feeling good about that. I suppose you can kind of see the argument. Well, you keep them here. People keep working. They keep the company keeps paying state taxes, but at a lower rate. The workers keep paying income taxes. The workers keep purchasing things. So if there's, you know, state or local sales taxes, they pay into it. If there's property taxes, they pay into that. So that the state and localities will turn out okay, or the hit will be less than the hit they're going to get from getting the $7 million tax abatement. You know, but what the other kind of flip side of this is that it feels like, you know, and put it a term, a much more common term people understand. Greg, you and I have ranted and raved and fumed about NFL franchise owners who every couple of years say, I just feel like I need a new stadium. And if I don't get one, I'm going to move to another city.
Right.
It's a way of sort of keeping locality hostage, you know, basically saying, if you don't give me what I want, and if you don't give me a better tax rate than everybody else has, if you don't give me stuff, local government, I'm going to take my bat and my ball and go home, and I'm going to go over to someplace who will. And some people might say, well, look, this is the way the system's supposed to work. There's nothing wrong with localities competing for jobs. Rick Perry went all over California and won, you know, convinced a lot of businesses to relocate to Texas because it was a better business environment. Yeah, but now the question is, if you're another company besides Carrier, do you now try to get the same deal from the state of Indiana? Do you try to get this from the federal government? Do you try to get this from lots of other companies? I mean, at some point, I'd like these companies to stop trying to strong-arm state and local governments to give them better deals, and I'd like them to focus on their actual job, which is to create good products at good prices that people want to buy. This is a possibility in which I'm sure Carrier loves it. I'm sure any company that competes with Carrier doesn't love it. I'm sure that, you know, we've just now created a very perverse incentive here, in which basically any corporation has a chance of getting a good deal and a special break for them because they're a large employer that a medium and small size employer will not get because they don't have that leverage. This has a little bit of an echo of too big to fail. This has a little bit of an echo of the GM bailout and all the other efforts in the Obama administration that we rightly tore our hair out over because we saw it as government intervention in the economy. Well, here we have it under a Republican president, a Republican vice president, by the way. I'm sure Mike, you know, even if you want to say that Trump was never that much of an economic conservative, look, Mike Pence, you know, we all thought was. And now the shoe is on the other foot, and Republicans are perfectly comfortable to play this card, and it is it's going to get the Trump administration a lot of good press and a lot of smiling, happy workers. The visuals were fantastic, but deep down, we are signing a Republican name to further government intervention in the economy, and I think a lot of bad things could flow out of this as we move on.
Yeah, hopefully it is not a precedent for things to come. Trump himself, I believe, has said, or maybe it was Pence, that once they're actually in office, they won't have to resort to that because then they'll actually be in a position to roll back regulations and hopefully get tax reform through the Congress. And those will create the conditions to give incentive for all companies to either stay here or relocate here. And hopefully that's the case, because you're right. Government micromanaging in the economy is never the right thing. And anytime Cenk Uygur is really excited about something, you better stop and think about it for just a little bit. But we are certainly happy for the folks who kept their jobs.
Indeed. Look, you know, what we love about the broad-based tax reform is it helps everybody, right? And so, you know, it's not like one company is getting a special deal or one company is getting a bigger advantage than the other. Something like this, it's like, look, Carrier made a big enough stink about it that Trump felt like he had to do, you know, Trump felt a need to respond. And it's sort of, you could kind of see the squeaky wheel gets the grease turning to the new philosophy, all kinds of ramifications down the road. And ultimately, the purpose of government is not to pick winners and losers in the market. It's supposed to leave that to consumers and the other factors. Greg, I hate to say, you know, hopefully this does not end with a bipartisan agreement that the government should be doing this sort of thing.
Right. Yes, exactly right. Set the conditions as best you can and then let economics and free market capitalism do its thing. Everyone will end up winning, or at least most will end up winning that way. Jim, end of a busy week. We'll do it again on Monday. Have a good one.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And a reminder again that we're sponsored today by Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile offering nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices, and it will donate up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. To sign up, 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. Have a great weekend, everyone. Join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.